Hey, this is Rick Overton, and you're listening to Brian Dunkelman
and Chet Wild
on the Dunk Tank.
On this episode of the Dunk Tank, Dunkelman tells the story of meeting Pete Best and experiences a moment of true personal growth. Chet continues to make headway in L.A. and finds a new dad, and the incomparable Rick Overton puts on a clinic of comedy wisdom.
Hey guys, Chet here. Visit our website, DunkTankPodcast.com, and follow us on Twitter, at DunkTankPodcast, or this baby won't stop crying.
My baby hates you. Donk. 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 I think we should have a longer theme song.
Really?
Yeah.
The same song, and you just you saying dunk more.
Yeah, just repeat. Just put it on a loop.
I can put a poll up on our website.
A what is it?
A poll. Like people
Can
vote. What did you think I said?
A pull up.
I can put a pull up
on
our website.
You haven't done a pull up in years.
All right, let's start the show.
All right, great. I just got back from my first road gig in 7 weeks, and a delight. I'm going to go ahead and say a delight because the Crown Royal flowed like wine. If anybody hasn't listened to the last couple podcasts, I had a son 10, 11 weeks ago, and this is my first time having left town. And it was bittersweet because I got off the plane and immediately got a call from my wife. Our son is sick, which is just fantastic. I've been home for 7 weeks straight, no problems. And so I felt awful because he was throwing up. He had a fever, and it was coincided with the week my wife went back to work.
Plus, all you wanted to do was get drunk, and now
well, that's the thing. And, you know, I felt awful, but what am I going to do? I've got to make people laugh. I have a job. Am I just going to go right back to the hotel room after my show, put on my pajamas, get on my knees, say my prayers, and just go to bed? No. I'm going to have a few drinks because that's how I deal with basically general stress in life in general. And listen, hey, if somebody lights up a joint, what am I going to be the one person to be like, no, I'm not. I don't partake in
no,
that.
That's
of course
my role.
I'm not. Yeah, that's your role. Well, clean living. So
I think it's cute, though. Your kid's home throwing up, and you're like, I'm going to drink until I'm behaving just like my child.
Well, you know, I just want to be in tune with my spawn. But the challenging part was then, because it's a three-hour difference, I was in Indianapolis, so having that late-night chat with my wife when I was just blotto. But testament to her, the next morning, she said, were you just really drunk last night, or were you high? And I was like, you know what? I was both. She's like, yeah, it was really funny. And that's my wife, dealing with a throwing-up child. So there's very little comedy in my wife is great, and she's awesome. So I'm going to bitch about her a little bit because it's just funnier that way.
Sure.
But she's pretty damn cool.
She probably smoked up before giving you a call.
No, she doesn't do that. Makes her sleepy.
Oh.
And she's with the child.
Yeah.
Now,
somebody's got to be the responsible parent.
Oh, I miss whiskey so much. I missed it so much. And they're one of those clubs that's just like they'll let you go behind the bar and make your own, which is fantastic. There's no drink tickets. At Crackers, by the way, great club. Have worked there more than any club probably in the country, and I think this is the best I've ever done. I never do well there. I don't understand it. They always bring me back. They got a great staff. If I do six shows and three of them are good, then that's a victory. This week, all good.
Now you're probably not going to get booked back.
Oh, yeah. I was too funny, actually.
Too funny. Too good here, Brian.
And I sold some CDs.
Oh, watch out.
Yes,
selling merch. It's almost like you're trying.
I am trying
to
be a real performer and have a real career, and I've never sold anything at a comedy show ever. And I've always been like, that's weird, but everybody does it. You're stupid if you're not.
Yeah.
So night one, I sold two, and then the second night, I sold one, and I was just, this doesn't, I feel
yeah,
like
we talked
whore.
On the phone,
this
and you're
is
like,
awful.
This.
And then Friday, I sold a couple, and then Saturday night saved my ass because I probably tripled my sales there. So definitely worth it. How was your week? How did you go on without me in Los Angeles?
I had
by
a good
yourself?
Weekend. I had a great weekend. I went to the Ventura Comedy Club and did a spot, and it was in front of a
real
audience.
And I'm going
there
for the very first time. What's it like over there?
It's a great club. It's right in the bay of Ventura there in Ventura mm-hmm. Harbor. Great view, because that's what's important about the
club. How long
club.
A drive? What time did you have to leave Los Angeles?
It's about an hour drive.
All right. Traffic? What time did you leave? You had to be there at 7:45?
I had to be there at 6:30 for a 7 o'clock show. There are two shows on Saturday.
Well, that's different then.
So, you'll be fine, dude.
If if I need to be there at 7:45, I should probably just leave at 5 to be safe.
Yeah, and then I did the they have a show there at the Happy Endings on Sunset every Monday. And I got to close that last night and do 15 minutes, which is like unheard of.
Listen, you've been here, what, a month, and you're already closing.
Yeah, it's great. There are some pretty big drop-ins, like people with Tonight Show credits and Comedy Central and whatever, and they're like, hey, Chet, you know that part of the show where the drunks hijack the room and everyone else wants to leave? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, we're going to put you up then. I'm like, all right.
The bewitching
I'll
hour.
Do it. But it was a lot of fun. Had a bunch of Buffalo friends there, and then a bunch of other people at that bar happened to be from Buffalo, so it was a cool little
networking thing. And then Chet called me, and he's like, you should come out. And I was like, I just got back, so probably not a good idea
take care of the
to
baby
leave
vomit.
For 4 nights with a vomiting child. But he's better, thank God. And it's kind of funny. He's changed in 4 days. It's really ridiculous. He's turning into a little person. Yesterday I was with him all day, and he just all of a sudden raised one eyebrow significantly higher than the other and had this weird look. I was like, oh my God, he's doing the Belushi. And then he just launched a butt rocket right into his diaper. So that his shit face has turned into the Belushi.
I thought that was a cute baby story to try to hit that Oprah demographic we're reeling in.
Not too worried about that.
I'm not going to
count on too many subscribers to the Oprah, if that actually ends up happening. Well, we'll talk about that.
Oh, do you want to talk about our last episode? I think you had a growing moment.
I want to talk about our last podcast because I had a dilemma. And I felt like I brought a very weird energy into that podcast. I don't know if anybody else is going to notice that, but I felt it. Here's what happened. We had a very talented dude on our last podcast, Jonathan Kite. He's on Two Broke Girls. He plays Oleg. Two Broke Girls, hit show, bona fide. And he is an incredibly talented stand-up comedian. He's only been doing stand-up 8-9 months, and he's already headlining colleges, clubs. Let's just put it this way. This guy's on a fast track. He's really, really talented, and he did not need to do this show. In fact, he did this show as a favor, not to me, but to our manager. We have the same manager, and I'd only met him once. We didn't really even talk. I just brought him on stage, and he killed. He was really funny, and then I found out he'd been doing stand-up 8 months, and it was annoying because he shouldn't be that good, but he's brilliantly talented. Now, the night before the show, Chet and I did Chet did.
I didn't know if I should bring it up to you. Yeah. I typed in Jonathan Kite and Brian Dunkelman in a Google search engine. Because I didn't know if you guys had worked together. I didn't know any backstory. No. And the first thing that came up was a tweet of his from like 2009 or something. A couple years ago, 2011.
It wasn't that long ago.
And it was...
Don't tell what the joke is. I want to go into it. But he tweeted a joke about me. Now, it wasn't malicious. I read it. It was funny. It was a good joke. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to bring this up because I thought this is going to be good podcasting. This is going to be interesting. This could lead to an interesting discussion about social media, about technology, and how has it caused us to become detached? Has it dehumanized us a little bit? Because I tweet jokes about people too, but I've never been face-to-face with them.
Yeah.
So
faced Kim Kardashian or a black dick.
Exactly. Well, let's... One out of two ain't bad. So I thought it was going to be an interesting exploration. But, you know, let's face it. It would have been passive-aggressive. Now, the joke was Brian Dunkelman is the Pete Best of reality television. Now, I was going to bring it up in a way that, you know, hey, that's a great joke because great minds think alike because after leaving Idol – all my press interviews for about 2 years, I would say that I was the Pete Best of American Idol. Same joke, just more specific. Now, if you don't know who Pete Best is, Pete Best was the original drummer of the Beatles. There was a drummer before Ringo Starr. And, of course, the Beatles went on to be the biggest band in the history of the world. And then Pete Best fell into a deep, dark spiral of obscurity. And so you get the comparison. Interestingly enough, I learned that the rumor is that Pete Best back in those days, the early days of the Beatles, Paul and John wanted to squeeze him out because they were pissed because Pete was getting a majority of the pussy back then, which is ironic because first season of Idol, Ryan Seacrest was mad at me because I was getting a majority of the cock.
Hello.
So, and I actually got to meet Pete Best. I think it was about 5 years ago. I get a call from Gary Delabate at the Howard Stern Show, And he's like, "Hey, Brian, we got a bit we want to do. We want to fly you in, but it depends on what kind of sense of humor you have about yourself. I don't want to piss you off or offend you." I'm like, "Gary, I co-hosted a show for you guys with Eric the Midget. What do you want to do?" He's like, "We're going to have these three guys, and they're all virgins, and they're over the age of 30. And we're going to have a contest to see who's the most pathetic. And then the winner gets to sleep with a prostitute at the Bunny Ranch. Brooke Morgan, actually." So, and they're like, "We're going to call it the Biggest Loser, and we want to see if you'll be one of the judges." And I was like, "Yeah, who else you got?" He's like, "Well, we're reaching out to Jackie the Joke Man. He used to work on Stern. And we got Pete Best." I said, "Wait a minute. You got Pete Best?" Yeah, he's doing it." I'm like, "You know I've been calling myself the Pete Best of American Idol for years." He's like, "Yeah, you know, you said it on this show." I was like, "I'm in. I don't care. I don't want to hear anything else. I'm doing this." So I got to meet Pete Best, and he is the sweetest, nicest guy, but there's just a deep sadness in his eyes. It was just like looking in the mirror.
Yeah, I'm looking at you right now. I see it.
30 years into the future. So we did the show. It was a lot of – it's always fun doing Stern. And then later that day, Pete was performing. He has a band, Pete Best – the Pete Best Band, and they played at like a Virgin Records or something. And so I got to hang out with Pete Best, Dennis Huff, who was the owner of the Bunny Ranch, Brooke Morgan, and Ron Jeremy, who was just there hanging out. And I looked around and I thought, what the fuck has happened to my life? So that's who Pete Best is. So I had a weird energy coming into it. I felt I didn't know how he would react. And then he walked in. He walked into the office, and he has this positive energy about him that is – it's just palpable. You know, you meet people like that. They just have a presence. He was so nice and so gracious, and like I said, he didn't need to do this. We chatted for a while. We started the podcast. He was so engaging and so entertaining that 10 minutes in, I wrote a note, and I passed it to Chet, and I said, "Don't bring up the Twitter joke." And then I proceeded to feel guilty the rest of the podcast because I had even thought of bringing it up. This is how nice a guy he is. He made me feel like shit for something I didn't even do. So I think that was kind of a big step for me. Maybe this is like what they call personal growth. Maybe I'm reversing the negative pattern, the negative thought pattern, and it would have made me look like a dick. I would have been a dick to do it, even though – I don't know. It's something you have to deal with. I've never been confronted. And the guy certainly didn't think he was ever going to meet me when he wrote that tweet, let alone sit across the table from
Nor
me.
Nor was it a personal shot as Not much as all. It was a casual
it
observation.
It was a joke I'd already done. So I obviously thought it was funny or else I'd have never said it in the first place. So I don't know. I just wanted to get that out there. I don't know. I didn't feel good about the interview. I think I told Chet take the reins on this one, and which you did a fantastic job.
Oh, the episode was fine. You were kind of...
chalk it up to how nice a guy Jonathan Kite is, because I couldn't go through with it. And guy is going to be a huge star. If you get the chance to see him do stand-up now, do it while you can afford the ticket.
Yeah, I think we should do a challenge. Let's just book overly nice guests and see how it positively rubs off on you.
That's a great idea. Maybe I should just surround myself with less assholes.
Yeah.
And then by osmosis, I'll become a nice person.
That's how it works.
You know what it is? Maybe, Chet, it's fatherhood. It's softened me.
Really? Changed you?
Because I don't know about you. You've not been in a position where somebody's taken a shot at you, have you? I mean
not
in Buffalo, though?
That's why, in part why I left. I kind of don't fit in there and needed to be someplace else.
Well, it's a weird thing. And let's just put it this way. It's part of the business for everybody, but it just seems like I do not search my name anymore on Twitter. If somebody has the balls to put the @ in it, then okay, you got me, because I have to read those because it's part of my career. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. So
good, man. You're growing.
Am I growing?
I think so.
By the minute.
I don't know if it's the fatherhood thing or what. But
who knows? How long have we been talking?
15 minutes or something.
You know, I don't feel like talking. I know I was going to talk about Idol. I don't feel like it.
No.
I don't want to.
I kind of touched it.
You know, maybe next podcast I will, because we still got a little bit to go.
Well, this is episode
like
5, and I told you after the 5 episodes, whenever you bring up Idol, I'm just going to say shut the fuck up. So you can try to talk about it, but I will be saying shut the fuck up.
I thought it was a Baker's Half Dozen.
It was 5. God damn it.
You're going to find me $1 every time I say Baker's Half Dozen.
There you go.
Here's the thing. I don't want to waste time today because... God, we have such an amazing guest. Talk about good gets. This guy, you know, there are certain people in this business or in life in general that when you meet them, you get to know them a little bit. Every time you see them, even if it's just to say a quick hello, afterwards you feel better. You just feel better. And this guy is certainly one of those guys. He is a wily veteran of the stand-up scene, a brilliant comedian, and an amazing actor. My God, this guy's been working consistently for I don't know how. He was in Willow, the movie Willow. Yeah, he was in that. Groundhog Day, The Informant, all over every great television show, Curb Your Enthusiasm, The Office, and what, just 2 weeks ago, very funny sketch, the drone sketch on The Kroll Show. And you can download his amazing podcast on iTunes, Overview with Rick Overton. It's Rick Overton.
Hey, Brian.
Rick.
How are you, my horror movie buddy?
Thank you so much. I did not. There are too many credits to list for you, but we were in the only movie I've ever been in. The only one.
And you were magnificent.
Oh, you. We'll talk about how great you were.
Character, the uptight comic on the road trip. So great, man. You must have been in a car with that guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's been. The never seen by anyone, nice Chet Wild, Rick Overton. The never released comedy. Horror movie cult classic, I'm going to call
classic.
It.
Cult classic.
hell.
But we had fun doing it.
Oh, it was such a good time. Yeah, and that's the first time I really got to know you. You know, I'd seen you out in the clubs.
Yeah,
we'd
see each other set and enjoy it, but we got to see each other do a little acting
yeah,
and
we
have
did.
A little fun and get
and you were
sticky
so,
red blood crap on us.
You were the only good part of that movie, to be
oh,
honest with
no,
you.
It was, you right now, come on. Now,
he played a psycho killer, like this religious zealot psycho killer who was just snapping and murdering people. And I was
the worst
one of
heckler
three.
In the universe.
Yeah, exactly. He took it way too far.
Starts as a heckler.
Oh, and I was one of three comics on the road in a crappy one-nighter gig, and the whole movie culminated. I got to jump on your back and jam a microphone into your eye socket.
I got the face. Scotty got me the face. It's sitting at home.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, that is so great.
The life mask face that he stabs, and then we have to glue a plastic one, stick it out of my eye. Is this thing on? Was the big joke.
Oh, that was like fucking psychos. It was great, man.
What year was that?
That was 9 years ago. Wow. Yeah. You'd think I'd been in another movie by then, but no.
Too busy working.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's me. Too busy podcasting. Now, I think that you probably thought you were the last comedian in the country to start a podcast. We've been doing this a month now, so we've got you beat. But I listened to a couple episodes, and your podcast is fantastic. Tell me how you got into that. What made you want to do a podcast? How did you fall into that?
Oh, all my friends are doing it.
all the other
so
cool kids.
So I listened to the different styles. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what I want to contribute to all this and what I want to do. The goal, and I don't know if I'm going to hit it every show because it may not be possible every show, but the goal is to take what the guest does and deconstruct it so a young artist would hear it and go, well, I want to do something similar. And this is kind of a template blueprint for how I might expect things to go while I'm doing it. I might find some shortcuts in doing it. And the whole thing is to pay it forward.
Yeah, that's a great idea because you had Greg Proops is the one I just listened to today. And
listen to the Jonathan
brilliant.
Winters one.
Oh, that's next on my list.
He's got some. Everyone has some interesting and wonderful stuff to teach us.
Of course.
And so I try to make room for that to happen. And they all do. Every one of them nails one oh my god thing, you know.
Right, right. Now, how did had you worked with Jonathan Winters before? How did you
on
get
the
to know
green
him?
Room.
Ah, that's right.
Remember Paul's
I
show?
I love that show.
Green
Paul
Room
Prevenza
on Showtime,
show.
And it's mm-hmm. Klein, Robert Klein, Jonathan Winters, and me.
I remember
thank
that.
Thank you,
now.
Uncle Paulie, for that arrangement.
That is amazing.
Could have been a lot of schmoes, and wound up being me, and I'm pretty grateful for that. So
yeah.
I can honestly say that was one of the amazing holy cow moments.
Yeah,
there,
that's
the
just
whole, to, the whole deal.
Just to get to sit around in a casual setting like that with a legend.
I didn't know what to say most of the time. I didn't want to use up his talk time
right.
with my words, you know. But I'm very reverent of him, you know.
Yes.
He's one of the major reasons I am who I am.
So who were some of your other comedic influences?
Carlin.
Sure.
Klein. Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Sellers. Dick Van Dyke. Everyone involved with MTM's kind of stuff.
Sure.
And, you know, Andy Griffith and...
Yeah, because you're a few years before me getting into the business, but definitely Carlin was a big one for me. David Letterman, actually. I distinctly remember every day from we'd come and I would tape it on the VCR, and after a basketball practice, all my buddies would come back to the house and we'd watch it. That was like 83, 84, 85. So,
wow.
But very cool. Now, how did somebody approach you about doing a podcast, or how did you go about actually getting it on?
LEG approached me about doing it,
very
Levity.
Cool.
And so I use their facilities sometimes down by the airport there. It's near the Howard Hughes exit
mm-hmm.
off the 405. And other times when the guest can't make it down there, I can meet them somewhere, and I have one of these cool Zoom recorders. Mm-hmm. You have a Zoom?
I do not.
You're going to need a Zoom.
Oh, yeah?
For when you don't do the show here and you need to go out in the field and do it, you're going to need a Zoom to do that.
Sure.
And it's $250 on Amazon. Got it. No problems. You know, loaded in, banging out a lot of shows on it.
I'm going to contact the Zoom people for that Z-O-O-M. Plug.
Z-O-O-M.
Oh, Z-O-O-M. Okay.
Zoom. Zoom is the
I thought Zoom is something else, isn't it?
The cheap version of an iPod that... Windows-based iPod that didn't do so good. But Zoom is awesome. It looks like a giant stun gun with the two crisscross mics on it.
Oh, nice. I definitely want
and
one
now. And it is a full hard drive recording studio in your hand.
So wow. Who are some of the guests you had to travel to?
Well, Dane Cook I just traveled to. I went to Jonathan Winters. I went to Weird Al Yankovic's.
No, nice.
Yeah.
Does he live in L.A.?
Yeah. I won't say where.
Okay, no. Yes. No, what's his address?
I'm not at liberty. I would never do that to a friend. So, in the California area. And, yeah, it's pretty handy. You're going to need one.
Yeah, that's very cool. Now, can you actually tape your stand-up sets with that, too? Is it
of course you can. But I usually just use the iPhone for that.
That's what I did. I actually just started selling a CD. I just did a show, a week of shows in Vegas. And I'm just going to check it out. And the sound system there is so good. I didn't even have an attachment on it.
Oh, you're telling me you were getting an album off of your iPhone?
What is it? Yeah. An album. I'm not kidding. It sounds good enough to sell to the people in Indiana.
People are shooting movies now for film festivals. Yeah. Or winning film festivals with iPhone movies.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I saw that.
Well, the sound system at the Harris Improv is so good that I just had it right on a stool next to me, and I was like, this sounds good enough to sell.
And so
now.
Did you do any editing on it?
I did. I put it into Audacity, did some editing. I could say taped like four weekend shows.
Audacity is the thing I need to get.
Audacity. Yes. Free download.
That's everything we're learning today.
We are learning
this
about technology.
Like unbelievably educational. This is great.
And I know nothing. I seriously just got off CompuServe for my email. I'm not kidding. I know nothing. That's why
I'm a Hotmail
email
address.
I've heard of the Zune.
The Zune, yes.
Yeah, Audacity, it's how I... Do you do voiceovers? Do you do a lot of voiceover work?
Not enough.
None of us do enough.
In a world where one man is getting all the voice work, other actors can do it too. Hello. This is Morgan Freeman. Now you're probably wondering, why is Morgan Freeman using up Rick Overton's talking time? Well, maybe it's because the sun doesn't set in the same place in the sky as it used to. Maybe I'm just getting old. And maybe I just don't want Rick Overton to ever get any voice work ever.
Have you come back for another episode where we just say we have more?
Hey, we got a really good get, you guys, from in the wormhole.
Done with love. Love you, Morgan. Please keep taking work.
That was one of my favorite memories from when we did that movie, Comedy Hell.
When we did
dinner,
impressions.
We just basically had an
impression
off.
Off.
It was
off,
so
yeah.
Fun.
Who's your new one?
Oh, my new one.
Yeah, come on, man. We all got a new one.
I've been trying to work on Jesse from Breaking Bad. Yo, Mr. White, I got to go.
That's good.
I got to yo. You want yo? It's all. I don't really have anything funny to say, but.
Yeah.
Is there anything that's yo?
No, that's his tone.
That's pretty much.
I like the Gilbert Gottfried you're working on. Mostly because of the face you make.
Oh! Back in the year 2000 BC, people were walking around saying, gee, this is a long time ago.
What are the other ones we were doing?
Oh, so nice to be here with my good friend, Rick Overton. Last time I saw Rick, he brought up God. I said, God? God is an absentee landlord.
Did you see him on Letterman? It was just a couple months ago.
No.
Oh, my God.
I'll go home now and
hair
check YouTube.
All over the place.
Well, that's because he's promoting the new HBO film about...
It might have been shooting the Phil Spector.
Phil Spector
which he looks
film.
Amazing in.
I think he's going to win something for that.
I think
sure.
He's going to do well in this
and
business.
And Helen Mirren, too.
Yeah, I know.
She's looking great.
Yo, God, still, what is she, 70?
I got
75?
A grand crush on her.
You know, that's one of the jokes I used to do in my act was that one of the keys to happiness, if you're married, is always remembering to delete the search history on your computer. Because I did. I walked downstairs one morning. My wife's like, why were you looking at topless pictures of Helen Mirren? Because they're there.
Yeah.
Have you not seen what she's working with? I'm just a man, honey.
And why are they set as the screensaver?
And honey, you know, I mean, maybe you can set your threat radius radar to a different tuning station so that you don't read this as an actual threat to anything we're doing. You might be able to reset it so you're not shooting airliners down, using them with bombers as they come over.
Yeah, she's on my safe list.
She picked
Brad Pitt. I picked Helen Mirren. So obviously she was very upset.
So you got that.
The one if you could have sex
with. The one
with.
If that they would let you off the hook with.
Mm-hmm.
You got Mirren and she got Pitt.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough.
Oh, my God. Whose joke is this that we updated our list? We know. My wife and I have a list, and I'm blanking on his name right now. I said, honey, it's been a while. Let's update the list. So she picked George Clooney, and I picked our babysitter. Feldman, David Feldman. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
Like sounds like David
I Feldman. Do a Feldman.
Oh, that's great. That's one of your new ones.
Hey, there you go. I've never even done it before.
Wow. That's really good.
A woman in Indiana traded a color television for her infant baby. Could you imagine trading life's most precious jewel for an infant baby? He is so brilliant.
He's so brilliant. I describe his comedy style as, you know what happens if you are struck accidentally with a hunter's arrow in your thigh, halfway into your thigh? Do you know how you remove it? What's the most hideous way possible to remove it?
Push it through.
That's what he does with a joke. Rather than, because if you pull it out, it makes a shotgun hole.
Sure.
But if you push it through, it makes a clean, like a .22 caliber hole. And so you have to just go, are you ready?
Yeah. Okay. Here it comes.
And he does that, oh, what? Yeah. You have to laugh. Just
did, you, did you work with him on the Dennis Miller show? Weren't you both writers on that show?
We were.
At the same time?
Yeah, well, we both went to Dwight Morrow High School in Englewood,
New
Jersey.
No kidding.
So, yeah.
I did not know that.
We got a little history.
Wow.
And I've known him for years and love the guy. And he's got his David Feldman podcast, and that's he's back in action again now.
Very cool.
So I guess even I should get in with the whole thing there, and you too.
Yeah, right.
We need to get on this train, you know, while there's still a couple of cars left.
Well, that's why I thought it was just so – Chet is the one that kind of was bugging me about doing a podcast.
And you were right.
And he was definitely right. And I just thought, what an interesting dynamic, because he's here for the very first time, full of hope and optimism.
Four
and
weeks.
Then,
well,
you
let's
know,
see what we can do about
well,
that.
Well, that's it. You know, look into the future.
Everyone keeps telling me I should, like, comics keep telling me at Mike's that the guys I've opened for, they're like, you're going to hate it. You're going to get through it. Give me a call if you're struggling. I have not, I'm happy to be here. Like, I like it. It's hard. It's definitely a transition not getting the stage time you're used to.
Sure.
But I've enjoyed it.
Where
are
you at? What town?
Buffalo. We're both from Buffalo.
Yeah, I guess you get a little more time in Buffalo.
Yeah,
there's less guys to go up and take your time.
Yeah. Well, less places to go up.
Everyone's here.
Though.
It's the last place, kind of, before you go into the ocean.
Now, were you out in Buffalo for you played Pam's dad on The Office for the wedding episodes, right?
We all shoot that up in the Burbank area.
Oh, really?
Because
I know some of the show they actually went to Niagara Falls, but I know if the whole cast went out.
Mostly B unit does that.
Okay.
A B camera unit goes out and shoots the outside stuff and makes stock footage, and then you cut inside to a thing that could have been there, but it's right back in Burbank again. You know, it's just not practical to keep doing away games.
Have you ever been to Buffalo?
I've been
like
to
doing
Buffalo.
The road. I don't know back in the day.
In the,
did you start in New York, New Jersey?
Yeah,
right?
That's right. So in the '70s, I did some Buffalo's.
What
gigs
clubs were there back then?
Oh, I think it was just college gigs and bar nights and stuff like that. You know,
so you know, like Yuck Yucks. I think there was a Yuck Yucks in Niagara Falls years ago.
Like,
I know there's
it
a
might
good
have been,
track
but I didn't
when I
do
started.
It. Yeah, that's the U.S. branch of the Toronto one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There was a Yuck Yucks right in Buffalo too, on around Hurdle, I think.
It's not there anymore.
Not anymore, no.
Yeah,
in the '90s.
Airborne Eddie.
Yeah.
Well, right. So
so do you still get up a lot?
We're starting to again. Set list is really activating. Have you heard of Set List?
That's Paul's show. Where
Paul Provenza
the...
does an improvised stand-up show. You're standing there, there's a mic here, there's a projection screen to your left. And when you come up, you're just sort of, you know, hey, how you doing? But you don't really know what you're saying to the audience. And the thing I need to talk to you tonight about is... baby traffic is what is it's
is that the one you really
slowing
got?
Slowing the world down is what it is, and then you have to just backpedal and save your ass at the speed of light and write a complete act as though it was always your act. And you can't, I mean, the good version of the game is you don't go, oh, here's this sucky suggestion I got a joke about.
Sure,
no, that's
right.
Comics who are really locked in their memory as the way they save themselves on stage, this will threaten the hell out of that. And they will attack the process because they're used to anything that threatens them, they attack. But watch their set just die after that because the crowd says, that's not how we do this. The way we do this is you act like this was always your act and you pretend and it's Liar's Club and you lie your ass off.
Yeah.
And as long as you do that, we'll let you coast.
Because stand-up comedy is not hard enough.
Yeah, well, this will be the hardest version.
No kidding. That's the ultimate yes
level,
and.
It's the hardest unless you've been trained to improvise your entire life.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like improv. It's just essentially a long-form monologue, but you're acting like it's polished.
Yeah, it's still not easy, but it's not as hard as it would be to someone who is purely memory-based. And it really sorts out people.
Oh, yeah.
There are people who live in the left half of their head and people who live in the right half of their head. And people who live in the left half of their head will corner you at a cocktail party and quiz you on books you have or haven't read and be very disappointed if you haven't. But they haven't written any of those books.
Right.
They don't honor the creative side of their own heads. They're very proud of their memory. But sometimes I have to sort of put some perspective on the conversation going, so basically you're saying you're roughly as smart as my iPhone is what you're talking about, because you both have equal space of memory.
That's the struggle I've been trying to make the entire time I've been in the business. Is I know you have extensive improv training and experience.
I think it's the most important
thing incredible.
Almost in anything in the world.
Yeah, I should do more of it because I started at the Groundlings and I just did the intro. And my nickname the teacher gave me was Denial Boy. So I was definitely living in that side of the
Sheriff,
brain.
Sheriff, the Daltons are riding into town. They're going to rob the bank.
Well, I'm the baker. What are you?
And
that was
scene.
Me. Because I got a great donut joke. I just got to get out. What are you talking about?
Denier boy.
That was me. Denial
boy. Denial prof.
I just started UCB yesterday. So I'm just getting into
great.
That world.
And good for you.
It was we had to do a couple monologues, and it was definitely – you know, they tell you right up front, like, you're all funny. You wouldn't be here if you weren't funny. Don't try to be funny. Just, you know, look for the truth. So it was very it was retraining how my brain works to not go for, like, a punchline and just kind of rant and let the truth in the comedy come out.
Do you want to be the guy that everyone wants to work with? And that includes when they're discovered later?
Yes.
And they're on set? Be the servant.
Yeah.
Set them up to be golden and brilliant the whole time. Be known for it. And then that word gets out. Then everybody wants you on set with them. You keep making them the hero. You've become a hero by doing so.
Where did you...
Write this down.
You got it. Just play the tape.
I'll play the tape. I'll go back. That's going to be my ringtone from now on. Just
play back right
there. You saying that.
You should record it on a Zoom. Now, what is your improv training? When did you start getting into improv? You started a stand-up, correct? Or improv first?
Oh, you know, there's no official start date for that stuff. You're doing it when you're a little kid.
Of course.
When I start studying it, studying it, you know, well, how much practice is called study?
Right.
And when did I officially, with a teacher study in...
when did you pay somebody to study?
Yeah, I paid Martin Harvey Friedberg and J.J. Barry, who were two original Second City members, who then went to New York and taught there.
Cool.
But it wasn't really under the auspice of direct Second City. I did a show called Zen Boogie in the 70s with my comedy partner Roger Sullivan that had a run out here in the 70s too, and was sort of a new age hippie-ish review, a variety review, and we improvised all our scenes, and I sort of saw that you can make a whole show out of this and the show sticks. I learned you improvise a thing, pick what you want, memorize a thing, keep the thing, but if a new idea comes in, adjust the thing.
Sure.
And that's very much the Second City philosophy, where you kind of pull your sketches and material from what you improvised, right?
That's what Christopher Guest does with all of his movies. He workshops it, and then, this is good. But he come to the monitor, let's watch playback. Let's tighten this scene down, and then we'll shoot that. And if anything happens on the set that's golden, we'll just let the camera roll for that, too.
Wow.
Because the one kind of improv we're not really teaching enough of is the on-camera agenda improv, and I want to start teaching that.
I would take that class.
It's called Impro Verite, and it teaches you the don't go for the laugh improv. Go for being the perfect servant. And it'll be hilarious. But all the things you think will save you on performing an improv on stage, they don't all work when the camera's made your head the size of an entire wall.
Right.
It looks completely unrealistic and nuts. And you blah, and you do a thing that would have killed at UCB, and you can't do it now.
Hmm.
The thing that where you would have gone, huh? in a scene, you have to go.
Yeah, totally.
We different. Will put this part of the show up on YouTube for anyone listening. Because anyone listening is like, what's going on right
Isn't
now?
Isn't that for us?
Yeah,
it's right there.
We'll put the video up. We put clips up of each episode. We don't put the whole video up.
Oh, well, but it's, we just, definitely it's about understatement, you know.
Yeah. Sure.
And that, like The Office. Remember, all sitcoms was someone says something sassy, and then someone tags it with something sassier.
Yeah, with a timing mechanism, like this is when you're supposed to laugh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And now it's someone says something messed up in The Office, and then lots of just faces like, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, blank stares, deadpan.
Ew, that kind of thing. And that allows the audience to feel like more of a partner
mm-hmm.
in the process because you didn't conclude it for me.
Right, you didn't tell me when
you left
I'm
it unbuttoned, and I'm going
to
start thinking of my own buttons now. I become more of a partner in the scene,
mm-hmm.
and that's the whole point of that.
Yeah, and that's why I think a lot of those, like Arrested Development, you have to pay attention.
Yeah.
And so much of television, the really good stuff, you have to pay attention. And I think a lot of people, I have my first child, and now I kind of get it. You miss so many nuances when you're like, please stop crying, I'm trying to watch my show. Pacifier. And it's like, come on, honey, can you please come over? What happened? I don't know what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's definitely the way I thought television should have gone a long time ago.
Absolutely.
And it's great to see that it finally, I mean, the British version of The Office, David Brent is probably one of my favorite television characters of all time.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
He's just so horribly uncomfortable. The more uncomfortable, the better.
I like the American
the
one. I think everyone's done a
yeah.
marvelous job.
Yeah.
There, you know, I can't.
Parks and Rec makes me laugh every time.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite television shows that are on right now?
You know, Community, Parks, Rec,
mm-hmm.
Office, sad to see it go.
Yeah.
Now, when you got on that show, was it one of those things where you were already a fan and you're like, how can I get on the show that I really like?
No, out of the blue, Pam's dad. I just had a fan down there and they got me in to be Pam's dad and I'm very happy, you know. And then I was in the Steve Carell movie Dinner for Schmucks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's good to have someone in your corner out there swinging the bat on your behalf.
What's that like?
Well, gather round, children.
My
it's a magical time.
My manager's in the next room. Let's not say that very loud.
So, yeah. Now, you're at it kind of new, huh?
We need some advice for Chet. Because
yeah,
how many years in the biz, man?
I started in the summer of 2008, and I've somehow managed to keep myself afloat with just stand-up the last year and a half. I don't know how I'm going to make that work here, but...
Buffalo was a little easier because
yeah.
you're a bigger fish, right?
Yeah. Smaller cost of living, and you know you can do a lot of one-nighters and road work in the Northeast and colleges. And
he opened for me a couple times at a club in Rochester, and then you know we kept in touch.
Yeah, that's how we became buds.
And he always did a great job. And a lot of times there were just two-man shows where you had the MC and do the middle, which is not
yeah,
which is not easy.
You do the features work for MC pay essentially.
Right.
You MC
sure.
for
so
a half
they,
hour.
Sure, sure. So but that's your practice time.
Yeah, and that's the way
so
I looked at it.
You get more time to do what you to do giant chunks in one piece as opposed to breaking it up between acts, which throws off how the big chunk would work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's good for patter. It's all for that's your some of your greatest improv training in your whole career will be while you're just doing patter with the audience.
Yeah.
And you'll go from I'm scared, and so when you're mean, I'm meaner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sign of fear. And at first, it's fine. But at a certain age, it won't read right, and you'll start to transition into conversation
uh-huh.
with them and not attack after a while. Because every time you clobber them too hard, you'll find every third or fifth time you do it, the crowd turns on you because you were too mean to them, and they sided with them again. It's
yeah.
like a nickel that landed on its side on the bar.
Uh-huh.
And the slightest breath will knock it one way or the other.
Yeah, see, I try to make it very clear that it's fake anger. On stage and when
winking
it works,
anger.
It's great. But then if it doesn't,
they didn't
like,
see the wink. Yeah.
But we watched you on American Idol, and you were so nice. I'm like, this is you're not there, you know. And I have a show where three bachelorette parties, three in
really?
One show.
That's a lot of dildos in one room.
That's
man.
Too many. That's a lot of
it's
dicks
a lot of
on
penis
heads,
draws.
Man. It's
yeah.
a lot of glowing peni.
Now, how do you get to that point of fearlessness, or what advice do you have for going from that?
Well, some of it is you can give all the advice you want in the world. You have to run the program.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a disc, and it just has to play. Yeah. I still want a few more shots practicing the mean stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to do it. And it's sort of like warriors turned healers. They had to start as warriors. They had to see how much harm they did to then turn around and start to undo it. And it won't really click into place before they had a good look. just the way it is. And so there is some advice you can give, and then just know you gave the advice for way later. And it's a seed, and they'll remember later. Yeah, but I got to run this sequence first.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's what he was talking about.
Yeah, I got to pick a few fights. I got to win a few, lose a few, till I start to sense in my bones this wasn't just anecdotal to me. It's my own life experience. And you can hear advice on top of that. But a lot of times advice is given knowing this is an envelope that Marty is supposed to open in 1955, you know?
Yeah, but to learn from those battles, what I'm learning is you have to go into the battle. I went through a very long period of time where I did not just go on stage at all. I just went through, I kind of went off the grid, and that's what I told him. I'm giving him advice. I'm like, you got to get on stage as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't end. And I was just sitting back going, I'm going to do my road gigs. I'm going to come back. And then I would go a month or two without getting on stage. And there's no personal growth there. So that's
and
what's
you,
been
you
really.
You need your own advice.
Well,
then.
I was like, what am I telling to this guy? So
he's like, that room's terrible. I'm not going to do that. I'm like, but you just told me to do any stage possible to become bulletproof. What is it?
I told you, by the way,
there's phases in your career when you do it.
Sure.
And it doesn't work right when you come back to do that. There's when you get enough miles under your belt, you aren't going to go back and do touch-and-go landing practice at Whiteman Airfield anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be bringing the big planes in. And then it's just whatever, you know, you got to do updates on big planes, but you're not going back and doing the Cessna again. And so, but the guy who doesn't know how to fly at all, he got to do a lot of hours on the Cessna. That's just the way it is. And so the advice for us is we have to find another venue that gives us that same sensation, but we can't go back to that one all the time. Sometimes you can, but sometimes you can't. It should, you know, saying comedy is comedy is comedy. I guess without any analysis, that's true. Mm-hmm. But when you start to really break it down and look at it, it's the same thing as being the old guy cranking the hat sideways, you know, at the bar trying to be with the kids. It doesn't look right when you wear the wrong clothes. Now.
Right. Yeah, you don't fit
I can't wear kid clothes anymore. This head doesn't fit right on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes out in your act, too. But your head, you can put that in things, and you can put yourself in a lot of arenas right now. And you'll get what you want out of it. Sometimes when you have enough miles behind you, you can do the spot, but I'm no longer bringing back what I needed because I had that lesson already. I got to make a new setting for the new lessons. Sometimes that's a movie set.
I mean, I think that's part of my move here, with just kind of glass ceilings where I was before and needing to be in a new setting to start to learn some new lessons.
New stimulus. You'll adjust to this one. And then you'll realize at this one, though, there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah. You can't
get
complacent here.
You can go to England, you can go to UK, and you should probably travel around the world a little bit and have a look at how comedy's bouncing over there.
Who books all that?
You got to save a little change and get over to an Edinburgh festival, a Kilkenny festival.
Where have you performed over there? Those two, where else? Have you actually gone and
London,
worked in London?
Jongleurs, Comedy Store. I haven't done a ton. Mm-hmm. You know, Proops is like one of the kings of the UK.
Yeah, he's doing
scene.
Like his podcast
Rich
in
Hall.
Paris.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's beautiful.
It's so
now
awesome.
How much do you find
beautiful.
That you have
yeah,
to...
It really
I
is.
Love that Greg is doing that.
It's fantastic.
How much do you find that you have to adjust your material or the way you deliver when you're overseas?
Now, here, let me give you the one of the great shortcuts of all time. You know the way here you need an intro?
Mm-hmm.
You don't need an intro, but they will hate you if you start listing your credits.
There. Really?
No, they don't. They do not like the American version. It'll make them hate you one whole set.
Huh. Mm.
If they over-intro you and you gave them too much to say, just think about a set.
Interesting.
You're going to be faced with, we'll decide whether you're good. You didn't need to tell us that. Yeah, they're very, you know, kind of strict about how they're presented something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll give you rewards like you can't imagine if you give them back what they're looking for.
What about pop culture references?
Most
How touchy
of them,
is that over there?
You know, use your noodle.
Right.
There's some crossover that works. Stuff that's in all the international news. Pop on a Sky TV when you get there and, you know, or CNN. I mean, BBC 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, and watch their news. Assume they're all watching the same thing. Everyone gets Huffington Post over there. Everyone gets all the web stuff, you know. And so certain things you got to switch to local news, and other stuff is the assumed things they must know about Justin Bieber, you know, Obama and the war. And also, when you joke about their stuff, you got to be a little cautious.
Sure.
They can do a Tony Blair joke that you might not be able to do because then, yeah, but he's our boss. We get to joke about
that. We can say
that,
not you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So,
you know, it's so interesting. I want to go to one of these set list shows because it sounds like it's – I try to experiment on stage, but then in this era, you never know who's recording you. You never know who's going to put it on the internet.
That's right.
I'm not going to say the name of the club, but I did – I wanted to work out material for a late night talk show set, which is a completely different animal than doing a regular stand-up set.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally different delivery. It's totally different style. And I went to work it out, and then like last week I see it's on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
By the club, and it's like, oh, that's
20,000 views.
That yeah, what and it's room? Just like, and I'm like right about
what club?
Well, Laugh Factory. Hmm. And the set was
it's a good video, though.
Set,
I think
it was a good video they yeah. shot. The set went well, but I would have done a different set if I'd have known it was going to be presented for. Yeah, that's not funny. This guy's, you know what I mean? It's I don't know how I can't even imagine anybody saying any other than for political differences. Anybody even saying anything negative about you or what you do on the internet. Do you have issue with that? Do you try to avoid it? I just can't see anybody telling you you're not, you know, this guy sucks.
You're going to run into that at some point no matter what.
Right.
Sometimes it's just a test to see what you'll do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think in my scrapper days, and there were some scrapper days, I used to have a scrappy thing going on with me back oh, a lot of years ago.
How long did that take to go away? Because I'm trying to let go of that myself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, look at your family stuff and your mom and your dad and everything that was adding up and whispering and spinning around in your gut.
Mm-hmm.
Try to put words to it. Write it down. Look at it clear with a grown-up eye. Mm-hmm. Dad, mm-hmm. you know, you're a dad now, and dad's got to look at a sentence differently now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now you're conveying the data to another one.
Yeah.
It isn't just what you keep. It consequences are exponential now.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy looks back on the stuff. And a lot of times it's finding the responsibility in what you have to do. Papa has responsibility because of a kid. But that may grow into extend into, I'll treat everyone with this moral structure now.
Mm-hmm.
It changed me. How many times have you heard guys say, hey, my kid changed my whole worldview and everything like that? And
sure.
You're saying, why should it end with this kid?
Sure.
So do I then go switch right back to the old stuff, and then the kid will one day say, how come you had that double standard, or did my presence change you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And since I don't have a kid, I wonder if I'm just going to add that rule anyway. Just start taking responsibility for getting the right stuff out to people.
Yeah.
You can adopt me if you want to fill that void.
Oh, that's
so sweet.
You
can be my LA dad.
Adopt a comic. That could be a very...
And he sends me a picture every month. And here he is by a drainage pipe in a taffeta gown that doesn't really fit, but he's very grateful for it.
Send you a new bit that he's working on every week.
Yeah. Here's
a new bit, yeah.
Well, we actually ask people... the same.
Are we still doing the question?
Yeah, we're trying to figure out something to put a kind of a button on things, and I tend to go towards the dark a little bit, and we thought maybe this is too dark. But we're just like ask three questions. If you have a funny story, you don't have to answer any of them.
Right.
You can be as serious and deep or as light and funny as you want.
Yeah,
but the three questions that we're asking is what's the worst thing that's ever happened to you? Or milder, what's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you?
Mm.
Or what's the worst thing you've ever done?
Mm.
We've expanded it to pick one of three three.
Well, there's some good embarrassing things. Worst thing that ever happened, I think, was being there as worst and best in as much as I'm glad I was there for my mom's passing. But it's one of the toughest things I ever laid an eye upon. Her mind was perfect and her body was disintegrating. Mm. So she was watching this movie of her body break away at the wheel of something solid, sound, and sane. But the cancer had other plans for her, so it took her. And so I was there for that, and that kind of, I had my first anxiety attack during that. I'm very analytical.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me can eject and detach and watch the film of me too. And I was watching my heart rate increase and my breath shortening.
Yeah.
And I went, no, I know what this is. That's panic, and there's something you do about it. And you get carbon dioxide back in your system and bring it down. So I was trying to huff it back down in a bag and all that stuff. And I haven't had one since, but that's the only time it ever hit me like that. And so my body went through incredible shifts and changes. I made a cry noise I never heard come out of a human before.
Hmm. How long ago was that?
That was in 2009.
Because I'm going through the opposite right now with my mother. She's going to be 84.
Her mind is doing the thing, and the body...
A million miles an hour. She can't sit still. She goes bowling, but the mind's going.
Yeah.
And it's...
Yeah, the body hyperactivates to cover it, right?
It's getting to be hour to hour at this point. She'll tell you the same story. So, yeah, I kind of got the same thing going in reverse.
And you're watching another loss of a thing. Yeah.
It's another story.
But just as tough. Yeah. Did you find your heart rate good? And then that I can't do anything about it, and I'm used to fixing stuff. The mail...
Yeah.
I've always been there to fix everything else, and this one I can't do anything about.
That's the thing, and I've got, I have 9 siblings. I'm the youngest of 10. And
there's Were they there with you?
Oh, yeah. The majority of them are home. My mom's still with us. She's just at the tail end of that. My father died when I was 11. So this is my opportunity. The worst thing that ever happened to me, people might think American Idol, but between the ages of 9 and 11, that was the worst thing I've ever done.
Oh, okay.
Between the ages of 9 and 11 years old, I went to 5 funerals, both of my grandfathers, my grandmother, an uncle, and my father. My mother lost her parents and her husband in the same summer. So a kid that age, you can't process that at all.
There's no reference point.
No. And when I just remember so specifically the funeral and the burial, and there's the headstone, Les Dunkelman, 19 whatever to 82, and then Jane Dunkelman, 1940 till blank. And a person who's just turned 11 is like, what the fuck is – oh, so she's next. Got the stones at the same time.
You got a rate on putting two names on a stone.
That's
what
basically
it is. Yeah.
So we'll just etch in
– the extra chisel charge is not that bad after that. Everything's in place. As cold and callous as that sounds, one day that's our consideration too.
Absolutely.
What am I going to stick the next group of guys with? I better fix this myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, buddy, I'm sorry. You're going through this with your mom. You're losing a dear friend. Was she always a supporter of you and believed in your act and all that?
Saint Jane.
Stuck with you when you were going through it.
First night I ever was on stage.
Yeah, that's always the toughest.
And you know what? She came a couple years ago
to
Webster, and they introduced me. It was a pretty packed room. One person stood up, clapped my mother. And you know what? I made fun of her a little bit. And then I said to people, you know what? Don't worry about it. She's not going to remember any of this shit tomorrow. Huge laugh, but she just couldn't have been happier just to be there.
Yeah.
I had one joke in my act about her. This is when I was 20. I'm doing this joke. I said, I have a friend who smokes marijuana with his father. Mm. I just can't even imagine this concept. I just can't see. My mom is, at the time, 70 years old. I can't see it sitting at the table after dinner going, you better hurry up, Mom. You're going to be late for bingo. And that was her favorite joke, even though it involved me doing drugs.
Yeah.
But I guess at the end of this podcast, if your mother is alive, call her and tell her you love her.
Yeah, this is – you know what? It's corny. It's corny because it's been done so much.
Mm-hmm.
But you breathe every day.
Yep.
You piss every day. That's not corny, and you do it every fucking day. So file this under that same category. If it's done, it's cliche because it's necessary.
Absolutely.
You got to eat. That's a cliche.
Mm-hmm.
But no one makes fun of that. Put it in that file, and you'll stay. You'll anything else you do, you'll utterly regret later.
Well, I got to tell you, thank you for giving this show credibility, because you're an amazing guest for me to get in our first month, and I really appreciate it. You're just one of the most respected guys in the business, and I'm really honored that you're here. And please check out Overview with Rick Overton on iTunes. Congratulations on your podcast endeavors.
And on yours, buddy.
And thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure and honor.
Thanks for
having
me. It's great meeting you.
It's great to meet you. I'm looking forward to seeing your stuff.
Yeah, all right. I'll bring you to the Bringer shows. I need 3 people a week from Tuesday at Flappers. So come on.
Yeah, we'll see it. We'll see it at Flappers.
Never say that again. Oh,
come on.
A huge mistake. I just
see it at Flappers. You got to one-up my real dad.
The Noble Show. I think that's a good way to end.
I'm kidding. My parents are great.
Thanks for coming again to join us in the Dunk Tank. See ya.
I love the title.
You like that?
Dunk Tank, baby. Overview. Come on. Let's play on my name.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
That was great.
Oh.
Wow.
child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. Son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today. I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed. Said, I'm gonna be like him. Yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. Coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. Well, he came from college just the other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. You know we'll have a good time then. Since retired, my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids are the flu. But it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when.